the Department of Community and Regional Affairs, and he has a chart up there, and so we'll open with allowing him to talk a little bit about his chart and about one of the revenues that the city has received from the state of Alaska. So Jim, if you'd like to go ahead.
Thank you, Senator. I'm Jim Plassman from the Department of Community and Regional Affairs, a local government specialist with the department. And I'm among my duties as program manager of the maybe I can turn this a little for the committee's enjoyment as well. What I've done is set out a timetable here of how the revenue sharing program works, and I think it's useful to, for background information, to have a little idea of how the revenue sharing program works to get an idea of the impact of Senate Bill 240, Senator Coghill's bill, on that. Now, this year, July 1 to June 30, let's just call this, this is the year in which the entitlements, the money will be paid under revenue sharing. What we have here is the October 1 deadline. That's when you have to get your application and budget in for to be eligible for a prepayment, which is equal to 50% of your entitlement from the year before.
All right, but just one question I think is really useful. Let's say from July 1 to July 30, mm-hmm. let's talk about a year. This would be the year of, let's say, 86, but it would be fiscal year 87.
Okay.
So are we, just as an example, so are we talking about that in July 1, and you want revenue sharing for that year,
mm-hmm.
this is the program that you have to go through. We're not talking about next year now. We're talking about the
That's
current
right.
year this, from July 1 of 86 to July. Yeah, just so we're sure we...
Yeah.
Okay.
Under the current system, the year that you put in your application is the same year that
you're getting
you receive
your money.
Okay. And that's...
Under the current plan.
Under the current plan. And in that application, there's information which is used to calculate the city's entitlement. That includes the population, the services provided by the city in terms of road service and whether there's health facilities or hospitals. And additionally, the application includes the locally generated revenues from the year immediately preceding the year of application and the year in which we receive money. Okay, this is the year that we get the money, or that you'll get the money, that we send out the money, and the year in which you make the application. And the revenues that are reported in that come from the year immediately preceding that. Okay, and we're talking about right now those municipalities that are on July 1 to June 30th here. It's a little different procedures for counting that. Okay, additionally, in calculating a revenue sharing entitlement, an additional factor that's taken into account is the property value in the city, or as it's called, the full and true value. And that is a calculation that is done as of the January 1st of the year preceding the year in which we take those local revenues. Okay, so that amounts to almost, 2 years. From the time that...
All right, so that would be July 1, 86 with the population and services.
Right.
But you would go way back to January 1 of 85, is that right, for your full and true value?
No.
Or...
Yeah, all right, let's just say this is 86.
I mean, if I'm going to get it confused, I want to get confused. Right.
So this would be January 1 of 85.
That's okay. So it's a full... 18 months before the July 1
for statistics.
Yeah.
Right. So this is one of the things that we're looking at is the amount of time between the time that the these different data elements are calculated and the time that you actually receive the payment based on those calculations. Now that prepayment deadline for applications and your budget is, as I said, October 1st. And the department, if you get your application in before, or on or before October 1st, actually postmarked, you'll get a prepayment about, we order them up that week, and it'll get out to you in another week probably. So you can get that prepayment anytime up to October 1st. So that's equal to 50% of the entitlement from the year before. October 15th, the department then makes an initial determination of what the population and different data elements are for each community that is involved, and that's to give communities an idea of what the department is looking at for their for the different data elements. If on the population, for instance, if there's a question about that, then the community can contact the department, or if there is more information to be submitted, whether it's a new census that was done, you know, for that July 1 population date, then that can come in all the way up to December 15th. Then additionally, November 1st is the application deadline, application and budget deadline to put in your application and budget and retain your ability to make appeals from a decision of the department on whether certain locally generated revenue should be included, or whether certain road mileage should or shouldn't be included. And December 1st then is the final deadline. But at that, if you come in after November 1st, you waive your right to appeal. Then on December 15th, after all this information, we've got all the applications in from everyone. December 15th, the department issues final determinations of what data will be used to determine the city's entitlement, revenue sharing entitlement, the population, the services, the locally generated revenues, and the full and true property values. For 30 days after those are sent up, until January 15th, a community may appeal a decision by the department. And then from January 15th until middle of March, the department has to resolve those appeals. And then a final run is done in about mid to late March on the computer to determine what everybody's entitlements are, and then the final payments go out end of March. This is in the best of all possible worlds, which last couple of years there have been problems, and the department has been forced to issue actually a provisional payment in the month of March based on a 90% level of the expected entitlement, and final payments came out in May. Final payments will not be sent out until the department has received either an audit or a certified financial statement, which covers the fiscal year in which the local revenues are being claimed in the application, and that gives the department the ability to check and ensure that those revenues that are estimated in the application are in fact the proper values to be used. So one of the things that Senator Coghill's bill is designed to do is give greater predictability to what those payments will be. As you can see, we don't know what your final payment will be until here in March, and this is, you know, you started your fiscal year in July 1st, and people are obviously concerned about what the numbers are going to be for budget planning when budgets are probably being done in March, April, May, preceding this July 1. And I think that the intent of Senator Coghill's bill is to address that, and by addressing one of the other variables, and that's the appropriation level that comes in from the legislature. And that's something that we don't usually know until, well, sometimes as late as July, although with the 120-day session and, you know, the greater cooperation between the different branches of government, we may hope that comes out usually by May. So that's to give a little background on how the system works now. And one of the things in that will still need to be addressed to give this greater predictability of entitlements is, you know, when these different values that are used to determine a municipality's entitlement, when are those going to be calculated? Because if we're still on this same schedule for determining the what those values are going to be through this process here, we're still not going to know for sure what a community's entitlement will be until March, even if we know for sure what the appropriation level is going to be, even in the prior year, or if we have a set level of full funding for that. So I wanted to present this information for the committee's information, and just a little background for the people here today to present how that's going to be affected by this bill.
All right. Assuming this bill passes, what happens then to that timeline?
My understanding of the bill is, first, there's kind of two elements that go into it, and please please correct me if I'm wrong, Senator Coghill, first of all, is that we're going to a two-year funding cycle, which means that when the legislature is appropriating the money here in this year, it'll be for this fiscal year and the next fiscal year. Then, as I understand it, on January 1st, the Commissioner of Community and Regional Affairs will look to see what is necessary for full funding of the program, and if there is not sufficient money in the appropriation, he will request Department of Revenue to transfer money from the undistributed income account of the permanent fund to the Department of Community and Regional Affairs to fully fund this program. But that's my understanding. So,
and you would also know, am I correct, that for the year ahead of that, when people are back doing their budgets, that they would know the amount. Is that correct?
Well, yes, that's the whole intent of it. The whole intent is that what Jim has explained here in the process, they would still be doing that fact-finding, but that fact-finding would be for the next year, not for the immediate year. So what the Community and Regional Affairs would be doing would be using the statistical materials that you developed here from your communities, but it wouldn't hold up anything. The full funding would already once we got this thing in a two-year cycle, you would be doing statistical work for the following year, not for the year in which you've got the funding. Does that make sense to you? Okay. Go ahead.
May I address that? This is one of the things, as you're aware, that the Revenue Sharing Task Force has been looking very closely at, and I think is designed to address that question. And I think that it is going to take a few statutory changes in the current statute that may not be addressed in Senator Coghill's bill, and we can certainly work that out. But what the concept of that would be is, as we talked about, if this is all, you know, the process that we use for the application year, but we also have the entitlements being paid in this year. Under this use of the prior year data, what we would do is essentially keep this time system, but instead of paying in this year, you would pay first, you know, at the very beginning of this fiscal year, based on the information gathered here. So you would have a transition year where you would just use the same data 2 years in a row, mm-hmm. and then just continue on the same sort of timeline, except that instead of payments coming, you know, in October, a prepayment in October, and a final payment in March, you would get one, the municipality would get one payment July 1, first week of July, whatever it takes administratively.
Madam Chairman, but that July 1 payment, the municipality and the assembly, as they're doing their budget for all of their stuff, would know that a year ahead of time. They would know, they wouldn't get the money until July, till June 30th, but they would know the June 30th of the preceding year exactly what that entitlement was going to be.
Madam Chair. Yeah.
All right. The one question that, and I'm really glad that's the first, you know, chart like that, and I think it's important to visualize things.
Yeah,
difficult. Let's assume that the program is fully operational. We're through the phase-in year. Then here again, we have to deal with, let's just make an assumption. It's in place, it's fully been funded for several years, and so we're into it. Let's even go up and take fiscal year 90. Okay. Fiscal year 90 runs from July 1 of 90 through to July 1 of 91, right? So we got it all together. And are you saying that will the funding have been made for that under this new plan, since we're a year in advance, when does the legislature actually appropriate that funding? Will they have funded that still in the spring for that year?
No.
Well, I think that's a, you know,
Yes, they will fund it, but they'll allocate it into the undistributed income count in 89.
In other words,
and they'll appropriate it in 90.
They may have may short fund it, but you would still assure them of the full funding that you had decided on a year ahead of time. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, just so we understand.
Madam Chairman,
is that how you see it?
Okay.
Go ahead.
Senator Coghill has the best, you know, grasp on the intent of the bill, and it's a little confusing, as you can tell. It's a very technical subject that needs, you know, to be hashed out with, you know, timelines and stuff.
I think those timelines, Senator, are very useful to
so
that we can see, because you're really making a decision in our case, fiscal year 90, back in fiscal when we're looking at the fiscal year 89 budget, what that level is going to be. So a full year ahead, we're saying that much is going to be available.
That's
the way I understand
that is correct.
That's
exactly correct. You're grasping it, Senator.
Well, I have all along.
The thing is that this bill not only gives the agency that has to develop all of the statistics a year in which to get the statistics, which doesn't hold up any of the funds to the municipality, it also gives them their entitlement. Their entitlement would be known 18 months before, basically, wouldn't it, Jim? I mean, it would be when we're going into the appropriating year is when the entitlement would be presented to the legislature. So in January, you would be presenting, in January of 1986, you would be presenting 1988 July 1 budget material, which would give, then it gives the municipalities the power to budget properly and correctly in March of that year.
Madam Chair, one thing though, that I think it's really important to do this, because I see if you're doing that, you're 18 months back on your full and true assessed evaluation. You may want to take a look at moving that up a year, because if you don't, if you keep that same formula and the same reporting of information, I see it instead of being 18 months, I see it 18 months plus 12, and it's a long time in terms of a lag for a community that's, say you've had a pretty good growth. Now, I may be misunderstanding it, but that's one thing you're talking about prior year data, so you really ought to take a close look, it seems like, at trying to figure out just when that information comes. If it stays the same, you're going to have a real lag there, and it could hurt a community that's growing.
That could happen after you got into it, couldn't it, Jim?
Yeah, I...
Your assessed valuation and your truth value.
The assessed valuation actually has the effect, if you have an increasing assessed valuation, that will have the effect of decreasing your payments. So I don't see the fast-growing communities really complaining about that.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But you see...
The other communities
are going to, it'll change your
okay. I certainly what would be useful, I think, would be for myself and maybe Senator Coghill's office to sit down and develop a very closely tight timeline for presentation to the committee. But I did want to bring this to the attention of the committee and the people here on, just to give an idea of the background against which we're working. I guess I have one other question for Senator Coghill that I just noticed as going down through trying to figure this out. I note that in the municipal assistance program, when we talk about this full funding level, it seems that the guarantee from the undistributed income applies to this base level of assistance. Is
right.
That
is correct.
And that's at a level of approximately $10.5 million. That's my understanding. So the additional $70 million that's in the program now is kind of at risk. Is that my understanding based on
it? I doubt that's what you intended.
No, the municipal assistance has got several formulas in it.
Mm-hmm.
You would be considering all of those formulas in a 2-year cycle, so you'd be your formula, your $90 million is what it about basically amounts to, would be figured 1 year behind in a cycle for the forward funding.
No, that's not what you're saying.
Well, maybe I can clear this up with Senator Coghill later, and then that would probably be the best way to address that. But I'm certainly willing to take any other questions about the timeline or any other information about
don't you sit, Madam Chairman, why don't you sit down, Jim, and take your papers right there so that we can have you up front. And I'd like to explain a couple things on the bill, Madam Chairman, is that I think we jumped right into it. Maybe we've got some people confused.
Okay. Well, if you want to back up and give some background.
The two-year funding cycle for municipal programs goes into the shared revenue and in the municipal assistance. One of the problems that we have in the many cities that depend on these fundings for their base of their budgeting don't really know what that fund is going to be until after the legislature comes in with its appropriation bill. And we don't know what it's going to be until after it comes off of the governor's desk. So it might be something altogether different than what the formula says. So what we did here in this bill, in Senate Bill 244, was to forward fund by 12 full months. In other words, we would use the statistics of 1985 to fund the base assistance programs for the state, to the municipalities for fiscal 87. And then we would catch up so that we would take and we would appropriate. Let's just use a graphic figure in the bill, is that we've got coming up fiscal 86. Is that correct? Are we in fiscal 86? We're in fiscal 86. All right, in the spring of 1986, the legislature will be working on the appropriation for municipal assistance and shared revenue and the school foundation formula. The school foundation formula is not in 244, it's in another bill. I think it's 242. They're companion bills. And what the intent of these two bills are is to use the undistributed income account of the permanent fund to forward fund that $700 million of obligations that the state has to its municipal and local governments, including the school districts. Now, what is the undistributed income account? The undistributed income account is the interest account that comes off of the permanent fund. One quarter of that fund goes back into the permanent fund, and that's what they call inflationary proofing the permanent fund. 25% is set aside as the fund that's distributed to the permanent fund dividend checks. And 50% of it is set as a undistributed income account, and it sets, and it's like the tail of the comet. And so you have, right now, we have about $800 million in that particular fund. It's part of the permanent fund, but yet it is appropriative. It is. We are able to appropriate it by the legislature. The permanent fund cannot be touched by the legislature. The permanent fund takes a referendum to open it up. But the undistributed income account, which is the interest account from the investments of the permanent fund, can be appropriated, and every year they appropriate 25% of it, which goes to your dividend checks. This year, everybody that has applied for a dividend is going to get $404. So it doesn't have any effect on the dividend checks. It doesn't have any effect on the 25% that goes back into the inflationary proof. And in fact, it doesn't have any effect on the permanent fund income account. It really preserves that undistributed income account, because what we're doing here is that we're allocating, we're saying we go down there in 1986 and we're going to appropriate $200 million to municipal assistance. Let's use your figures for 1988, for the fiscal year 1987. For fiscal year 87. We're in fiscal year 86 now. Mm-hmm. All right. And we will allocate $2 million of the undistributed income account for fiscal 1988. which in turn, in next year when, or the year after when the legislature goes down, and they go down in 1987, they will then appropriate the $2 million that we allocated out of the undistributed income account to the municipal assistance and shared revenue account. If revenues fall to the point where that we can't give them the $200 million and we can only give them $197 million, the $300,000 of the shortfall will come out of the undistributed income account, guaranteeing the municipalities whatever the allocation is that they set up as on the forward funding, on the roll of the forward funding, so that when the assembly members of Nenana and the mayor set their budget and they set their millage rate, there's no disruption as far as what monies you're going to be getting from the state. And then this follows in a cycle. Every 2 years or every year, what you're doing is that you're appropriating and you're allocating. You're appropriating and you're allocating. The problem that we have right now is that the municipalities have to make their budget in April and May. They have to set their millage rates in April and May, and their new fiscal year starts July 1. And sometimes they don't know exactly how much funds they're going to get from these two basic funds. And I would say that Nenana probably depends 60% on those funds for our full budget. So in order for us to run certain functions, and what this is really called, it's called cash-based budgeting. Now, if we're, and it would be nice if we'd, when we had all of the money floating around the state, that if we had done this, we would never have had to resort to the undistributed income account. But this is the only place where there's readily available $700 million. Because what did you say yesterday? That the three programs, municipal assistance, shared revenue, and the school foundation formula, is 38%?
Oh, a little less than that.
36% of our total budget to run the state a year. So, and when they say, well, the municipality shouldn't get the problem that I see is that as the revenues start shrinking, and they're shrinking, we've got $387 million less this year to spend than we had last year. And as those revenues shrink, the administration and the legislature is going to say the municipalities can raise their own revenue, so we're going to give them less money. And this way, you have one full year ahead to plan your schedule, so that if the revenues fall by 20%, the legislature will allocate 20% of the shared revenue and the municipal assistance. The city assembly for Nenana and the city council for Anderson or any of the communities can then plan themselves one full tax cycle ahead of themselves, so that you have the time to combine programs, to eliminate programs, to set new tax rates, to have public hearings, find out what the people want. If they want certain services, then we're going to have to figure out some other way of paying it. And that's the intent of 244, of Senate Bill 244. And that's the intent of Senate Bill 242 on the school. The school is basically the same way. We don't know until after July 1 whether you're going to get funding in the school system for all your school teachers and all your teachers' aides and all the whole program. You really don't know that until you get that dollar. Well, if this forward funding and we allocate out of this reserve account and we're not spending it, the only time we spend out of it is when we can't come up with our guarantee to the municipal governments that we've got that much money to give them. And I know that that's the big debate. The debate about programming money ahead, planning ahead, doing your budgeting and your financing is not really the crucial issue. The crucial issue is, where's the money going to come from? You know, $700 million is a lot of dough. And but yet
$500 million every year is going to be spent for educating the kids in the state. And $200 million is going to be spent for municipal, or $190 million or whatever it is. But I think that the two crucial places in this bill are, number one, where the money's going to be funded from. And the permanent fund trustee people are saying, don't touch our fund, you know. Well, that's all right, don't touch our fund, but what do? Close down two classrooms and still keep a savings account? If there we got a savings, and this is my argument, if we got a savings account, it's for a rainy day, and this certainly gives us the position to spend it. If it was for capital improvement projects or for city halls or roads or skating rinks or stuff like that, well, I'd have a little bit of a problem with it. But it's for the general overall function of local government, which is a commitment that the state's made. And it's the same basic obligation. And on that, Madam Chairman, I think that it explains it a little bit further, and it explains what Jim was talking about here for the people that are in the audience. So now maybe we ought to go to open comment.
Okay, great. Okay. Yvonne, would you maybe move that chair around so that we can have them testify?
They can sit over there because there's a mic over there.
Yeah, uh-huh. They can sit over there. Maybe Jim can move
down. Move down a little bit and they can sit right there.
Yeah, right. So they can sit there. Yeah, they just sit with it. Well, Jim, you could just come up over here by Arliss or something. You didn't mean to go back. I didn't mean to send you away from the table. I just trying to get the people next to a microphone. Okay, I'll just start here at the top. Tim, you wanted to testify? Would you like to come up and testify?
Let me just down here. I'll move it back.
That's right? Just your 5 minute warning.
Yeah, okay. Just move it back when it gets over here. Okay. Is this a 30-minute talk? Oh, it's 45. So
you can get back here on this.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Sorry about
it. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, and since we are recording it, if you would state your name and who you represent, and then if you have comments or just questions or however you want to testify.
Okay, my name is Tim Simpson. I'm the project director for the United Press Health Council on Aging. Yes. Oh, you didn't have to say. Well, at any rate, we received a copy of the bill proposal the other day and passed it around. And from what the people could understand was that it was definitely a raid on money. And so they asked me to type this up. To whom it may concern, we have been undersigned in regard to SB 244, do not approve of the use of the undistributed Alaska Permanent Fund money as specified in this bill. And then it was signed by our seniors. Okay? That is my testimony.
Okay, great.
All right. I'll leave you a copy.
All right, great. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Could I ask a question?
Sure.
Tim, would you also say that if the funds go down, we had $2 billion. And I'm throwing some real rough figures at you, but we had $2,100,000,000. We're going to be $400 million further down from last year, so we're going to be down to $1,700,000,000. So we're going to have to take, and if you figure that out in percentages, that's about 20%. All right, now 20%. If we have to go down 20%. If you've got a fair figure in here, we not only have to assure that the school and that the street lights and that the municipal programs continue, but if we don't use this type of system where that we're not spending it, we're just using it to give the local government people a chance to know how many dollars they're going to get, do you still disapprove, or of your group still disapprove of using the allocation of the undistributed income account?
As I understand from what they're telling me, they don't.
Who's they?
They are the seniors that I represent.
Okay.
The way that they understand it is that you're taking money from the fund where they get their dividend check.
No, absolutely not.
Well, then what needs to be done is a really good explanation.
That's why we have hearings.
Right.
Did I explain it to you good enough for the opening?
I would, like anyone else, I'd like to have Rick
chief, he just got it probably 15, 20 minutes ago, I guess.
There are probably many questions, you know, now that I understand this much that I can take back. I can talk to the seniors, explain what I've just heard, and there will be other questions. Why hasn't this ever been done before? If this is not a raid on the permanent fund, we've never heard of this interest money that's just been hanging around growing moldy.
It's not growing moldy, it's growing interest.
Well, I mean, moldy in the sense that the municipality's CCRA is not getting to use it or anyone else.
I guess, Tim, it's because this is my first year in the Senate. I would have done it 4 years ago if I'd have been in there.
Madam Chair, I wonder if I could make a few comments.
Sure. Because
it is confusing on the permanent fund, and just kind of in way of general discussion. I worked back a few years ago when I chaired the legislative budget audit committee real closely with the permanent fund. And, you know, we've done a lot of things that are maybe smart and some not so smart since the money came, but one of the things I think was kind of smart, we took with the constitutionally dedicated portion of the permanent fund, plus some additional funds, and if you'll remember, Representative Oral Freeman was kind of a push behind it. You know, there was an extra $900 million, and there was an extra $1.8 billion put into the fund over the amount that the Constitution called for. So about 17% of all of the oil wealth that's come to this point has gotten into the permanent fund. And when we were looking at setting it up, I mean, who's had a permanent fund before, you know, and it's not an easy concept for government. Government usually doesn't get to be a saver. So there was a lot of debate in looking at, along with the permanent fund board, a lot of, what are some of the other major foundations, like the Ford Foundation and the Rockefeller Foundation, and there's a whole bunch, and we talked to a lot of people. And out of that came a way to manage the fund, what you could invest it in. For one thing, that the fund can't invest in gold, because it doesn't, in a sense, it may grow in value, but it's very volatile. Certain kinds of real estate, but pretty conservative kind of investment. One of the other things that was done was to say, well, inflation at that time, you know, was running really high. Now it's down pretty low, but it was up in the double figures. So there was an inflation adjusting. Now what's happened is that normally a fund will, in true value, after you meet inflation, will maybe earn 3% real growth. But our investment, just because of the climate and the kind of management, has earned a whole lot more than that. So they haven't had to use as many dollars to put back in for inflation. In addition to that, we have a rolling average, a five-year rolling average on dividends. If you took the real earnings of the permanent fund and took half of them, you'd be getting more than $400. You'd be getting substantially more. But that's based on a five-year average. So the fund is growing very fast. So there's extra money from the income averaging for the dividend. There's extra money not needed right now for the inflation proofing. So what's happened, in other words, the fund is earning more. You're not receiving the total amount of dividend for, say, the current year's earning. But it does smooth it out, and you'll get all your money eventually. And that money has gone into what they call this undivided income account. And it's built up very rapidly. It's around $800 million, give or take. Today it's not needed for either the income or the inflation proofing. Portions of that may be used in the future. Now, when you see figures on the whole permanent fund, where it shows that, say, in 1995, that it's going to have earnings after inflation proofing of about $500 million, they're including the permanent fund people. They're including this $800 million as though that were part of the body of the fund. It isn't. I mean, the legislature can spend it. But that's the debate that's going on. Senator Ferguson last year, for instance, had, and Senator Josephson from Anchorage, proposed a bill, as I recall, would have taken portion of that for capital projects. I think there are about 11 or 12 bills that have different things that people would take out of that undistributed income account. Some bills say you should put that into the body of the fund so that it, you know, creates additional income. So that's really kind of the debate. Now, I'm not, you know, Senator and I have a little bit different view, but what he is doing, I think that if there's a lot of merit to try to stabilize the funding that comes to communities. But the other side of it is that where we should be using those funds? And that's where the disagreement. And there's a lot of press, and I can see where people are coming from.
But you, Senator, you did an excellent job up until the last statement. We're not using the fund.
No, only...
We're using it as a warrant.
Right. It would only be used if the legislature did not appropriate those dollars. That's the question.
And hey, if they didn't appropriate them, what are you going to have? You're going to have chaos on the
You're going to have a lot of mad people.
You're going to have chaos on the school level and on the municipal level. So you might just as well forward fund it, because if we go into a dip where that we get that much of a revenue drop, we're going to use it anyway.
Yeah, I just...
You know what I'm saying? You're going to use it anyway.
Well, my suggestion is just to explain to these people who receive it.
But I wanted, I wanted to make sure that you understood so that you can take it back to your group and we've got all of the graphs here, because that's one of our biggest problems is communication.
Right. Well, reading the bill, it doesn't quite lay it out that clearly.
Oh, it does, but it's just too much legal gobbledygook, because it was conceived, and it was conceived by me, but it was written by a bunch of lawyers.
No, but your point is that the people want to understand, and because people do care about the permanent fund, it's the people's
money. If anyone
fund.
Receives the permanent fund that is more important, I mean, if there's a list that's prioritized, it's seniors. They need it most. It's crucial to them.
Yeah.
And not to explain it completely, you know, is risking, you know, something like this where they object
but
to it.
We have the longevity. We guaranteed the seniors as of today the longevity bonus. They'll get that. New people as they come in after, was it 88, wasn't it, Senator?
So they go on the ballot in November of 86 to decide which program, so they're just continuing it now.
But regardless of which program, the seniors today will continue to get it.
So I'm not senior enough, honey, so I'm going to miss it.
You and I both.
Let's go. Great, thanks.
Thank you.
I just think it's wonderful people really care about the permanent fund, though. I think it's great. Okay, Gilbert?
If we do this in the undistributed income, if that will affect the dividend check.
No. It has nothing to do with the dividend check.
Has this bill got anything to do with, I mean, what are the safeguards for that the municipalities get it? What safeguards, are they got to use for specific things, or can they use for sweetheart deals, or
both?
All these.
Both.
Both. I think that's, but it has to be budgeted, Gilbert, and it has to be budgeted, and you have your, it has to be budgeted, and it has to be appropriated by the Assembly, has to be put up for public hearing, it has to go before public hearings. It's not something that can be spent at the will of the mayor or the will of the Assembly. It has to go through the budgeting process on the local level. Shared revenue. There's two programs, Gilbert. There's shared revenue, which has a formula, and it's a sharing of the revenues, and it's the total effort. And then there's municipal assistance, which has to do with roads,
formulas in there, as I recall. And Karen has to set up special accounts for each one of those fund receipts. So, I mean, it's not something that's just, it's not like a CIP project. That's what you're thinking of, I think. Capital improvement project. But the thing is, this does not touch the permanent fund dividend check.
Inflation proofing, the permanent fund corporation, and that's what they're saying there, sees that as being needed for those purposes in the future.
Exactly.
All right,
but this
municipal
deal here, is that going to cut into this?
Okay, I think that's where Jack, the issue.
Hold the fund at a standstill or keep it small from getting see, big enough where.
But Jack, that's the issue. You see, they're saying that those funds will be used for that purpose. But what you're saying in your bill is that if the legislature fully appropriates it, that it will not come out of this fund.
That's
it's
right.
Only if there's a shortfall in how the legislature appropriates the fear, you know, or that they could go in and actually take those dollars to fund it. And it would be from the fund they're talking
yes.
about. There.
But Senator,
he's right,
and
that's
but
the
Gilbert, fund. It would not be the total amount. This is the thing that we're having a hard time communicating, that the legislature appropriates for school operation every year. The legislature appropriates for municipal assistance. The legislature appropriates for shared revenue every year. What we're saying is this is a forward funding, and if there was a disaster in the economics where that it went below, the only way that you could meaningfully have a forward funding concept would be that you would have to guarantee the municipal governments whatever that allocation was for that next year cycle, you'd have to guarantee it someplace. And that's what we're doing. So we're not spending the money. It's not that we're not raiding the fund, quote, they're indicating.
Well, the inflation is 6% or so. What if it doubled or triples that?
Then you'll have to have a wheelbarrow to go to the store to get a loaf of bread.
What about the permanent fund? What's going to happen to that if you...
Permanent fund is still fine.
Right.
Permanent
what
fund we can't touch.
Right.
Well, I mean,
no, but Madam Chair, this
point. Undistributed account,
yeah.
I mean, okay, isn't that mostly plowed back into the permanent fund?
No, 25% of it goes in.
Well, Jack, it's 50, but that's okay. But the point of it is... In
the statute is 50.
This fund would, if the inflation rate grew very rapidly and your real earnings of the fund were not enough to meet that, they could come to the undistributed income account for those additional inflation proofing. And as your, you know, I don't want to make it more complicated, but that is the portion, that's where they would go if you were not meeting in terms an adequate amount, you know, your dividend fund is set. Let's say the earnings dropped very radically, and it's a kind of a what-if thing, and instead of having ever-increasing amounts available for dividends, it went down. Not likely, but let's say it did. Then, and the same thing, if inflation went up very, very rapidly, the fund didn't earn enough in a year to provide both for this five-year rolling average of dividends, did not improve, have enough in that year for inflation proofing, then you would go to this $800 million. But Jack's point is that he feels the legislature will appropriate those dollars and it will not take out of that. You know, I'm trying to,
here.
As I see it, I'm trying to be, you know, lay it out honestly.
And to add just one point to that, if all of this calamity happened, the pressure from the public to the legislature would be so great to fund schools, to fund the educational process, and to fund shared revenue and municipal assistance that they'd dip into the fund anyway. That's my point. My point is that we're not dipping into the fund here. We're using the fund as a warranty. We're using it as a conduit. And as we roll it through
It gets appropriated each year. And I don't see the legislature, we look very, very hard at all of the revenue projections. And Arliss has been there, and she knows that you look at these things, and the legislature really hasn't missed too much of the bet as far as revenue projections, and I think that they're pretty much always on the conservative side, except 2 years ago they kind of got a little wild when they put that other $500 million in that we had to back up and take part out last year. But other than that, I'm not going to debate it. It's just that I think that it needs to be explained as exactly what the intent is here. And I guess that's my concern.
What makes me suspicious is not this hearing is not advertised and not posted anywhere. I mean,
suspicious?
The intentions of the politicians and bureaucrats getting their hands in there.
Sir, I apologize if you didn't know about it better, but we sent out 200 cards and we sent out public service announcements. And so
it was in the radio. It was in the news minor.
I did not know it. I'm sorry.
The news minor is... They hide it. I mean, we're going to have to get a magnifying glass to find it.
Would you, then let's turn a negative into a positive. Gilbert, how would you suggest that public service things like this be published in the state? How would you?
Well, both boards, like here in Indiana, at least everybody look at most everybody in Indiana, like the news minor and look at the funnies.
Okay, you're saying that what we should do is post it in post offices in every place in the state. And, in other words, send it to the postmaster and say, please post in your post office.
We can do
good
that.
Idea.
Good idea.
Good idea. No, I mean not only for this committee, but
everywhere.
For every committee.
Right. So, Madam Chair, I'm just glad to be in the manor and have a chance to meet a few folks.
All
right. We're even then. But I'll tell you, keep an eye on us, okay? Anytime you get a politician, you watch it.
Her. Only to him.
We got that one figured out.
I'm just not going to be too serious this morning, even if we're talking about serious stuff.
Oh, I never stated my affiliation with the Tiger Keeley Corporation, the name Traditional Native Council, and the senior chief.
Oh,
okay.
Good.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm George Hobson. I'm treasurer of the Indiana City Public Schools School Board. I also work as superintendent of public works for the city, so I get into two budgeting aspects. As everybody has stated, reading the bill and the legal to gobble hoop in it would leave any civilian snowed under. But the concept that we are required to have our school board budgets to the city, municipal government, and approved by them, and to the Department of Education and approved by them early in the spring, and having no idea what actual revenues the school will receive until July or whenever the legislature completes its business, leaves us strictly with the guessing game. Then we also have another factor in there that we don't have our final revenue count until we have our first quarter attendance records at the school. So we've got two or three different guessing items in there before we ever start a budget. And that's what it turns out. It makes it very hard for us to try and negotiate salaries for teachers, order new programs, new books, whether or not we're going to be able to do any expansion in building maintenance or any of these type of things. We're actually a year behind in everything we do because we're guessing off of last year's budget and what we actually got from last year. There's no way we can accurately forecast that. We can't afford, as the state does, to hire people who try to forecast that for us. We just have to sit down and kind of guess that. Some people would argue with me, but I believe that the permanent fund was put there to begin with to try and save us paying income tax when the oil revenue disappears. And I love they can more or less start to figure out, you know, we've got this revenue this year, it came in, so that is what we can appropriate for next year. We know we've got that in the bank, and unless something happens, we've got this amount of money that we can give out, and people can spend on that to run their governments. And that we basically shouldn't have to touch any of the unappropriated monies if it's looked after in a decent manner. To the city level, I'm the same way. Of course, I don't have near as much control in city budgeting other than my department submits our bottom line of what we feel it's going to take us to maintain the streets and the airport and keep things open for the ambulances. Of course, the ambulance itself comes from a different department. But they have the same problem trying to guess, too. And then the poor assembly people have to put that together and try to get it to you in a timely manner. And so we're always guessing, well, are we going to get enough this year? And how can we set our mill rate? And as a person living in Indiana, that's another thing. How much is my mill rate going to have to go up compared to how much the state revenue goes down?
Madam Chairman, one of the things, George, that we didn't explain, and Senator Kurchilewski just hit on it when she said the constitutional fund. And that's the reason why we picked in this bill the undistributed income account of the permanent fund is because it's the only fund that's dedicated in the Constitution. We have no dedicated funds. We couldn't, even if we had lots of money, I don't believe that we could set up a dedicated fund for forward funding. We would have to have a constitutional provision somewhere or other, because the Constitution says two things: no dedicated funds, and one legislative body cannot dictate policy to the next legislative body. So you got two problems. Well, this way, by rolling it into the tail of the comet, as I call it, the undistributed income account, which is an interest account that's back there behind, that we can roll it and then would go from one legislative process to the next legislative process, and it all would also be in a dedicated fund. So,
and as Jack explained earlier, if we do have a shortfall in revenue for 1 year, we would know that we're still covered for the fiscal year we're going into, and we can see the revenue has dropped this year, so we know that is going to affect us the next fiscal year and gives us time to adjust our mill rate or go to the people and say, are we going to have bonding for our schools, or how are we going to go about what we need to keep the level of education where we want it in our town? And either we have to talk about the money ourselves or we're going to lose it, and it gives us time to make our choices. Would not
base their budgets on something other than previous experience and demands for services. That I think that in terms of the orderly development throughout the state, that it would make a lot more sense. And I get the understanding here that what we're talking about is a one-shot deal to begin with, to get people up to speed, municipalities, so that they are in front instead of behind in their funding, in their budgeting, so that they will be able to project forward instead of, as I mentioned here, the situation that I know that a lot of communities find themselves in, and that's utilizing revenue sharing municipal systems as something hopefully that will be able to pick up a deficit.
Madam Chair, yeah, it's really true. It's the whole thing is true in a sense throughout government. That's why there's been such an interest in either forward funding. You know, when we go down there in January of, say, the coming year, we're having to project 18 months ahead to the end of the fiscal year we'll be dealing with as to what those revenues are going to be. And last year, as you know, when we'd left the previous year, we thought the books were balanced. And then we came back, not only because the governor put money into the permanent fund, so that was $300 million down, plus we had seriously dropping revenues. And so we really had some terrible budget crunches. And so it's true in a sense for everybody. I mean, if we have a pool of money so that we would know next year to fund all kinds of things, including state governments and jails and university and everything, it would be wonderful. And so what we're doing here, or what the senator is proposing, is to take at least a portion of that and to try to have some certainty. One of the things I think is going to be interesting challenge for community and regional affairs to look at, this past session, the legislature took from the Department of Revenue the municipal assistance program and put it into community and regional affairs. So now they have both municipal assistance and revenue sharing. And I think they're going to have to, since they'll be administering those programs, to look at timelines. Because your point of, you know, one coming kind of late in the year and giving you a cash balance and everybody says, well, gee, they've got money. But we really need to look at how those funds are coming to you and what the reporting dates are, whether this legislation makes it through or not. So I almost feel that something at municipally, I don't know, Jack, whether you feel it's necessary, but for years they talked about just the whole question of municipal finance, of needing some real blue ribbon kind of work, and I know you're doing some of that in your group, just to look at these things that they don't make a lot of sense where we've got different programs, they're not working together. So they come back and bite you, you know, a little bit.
Madam Chairman, I also sit on the governor's task force for municipal assistance and revenue sharing, which is a whole different, that will even interest you as much or more than this, because it has to do with entitlements, how we are going to change entitlements based on a position of you know, need, what small communities need, where does it start, the basis and all of that. And I'm not going to really get too far into that because it's a whole complex subject, but just to add to what Senator Sturzluski is saying is that's another program. This here is, you're reading it right. This is a predictability. This is for your management, proper tools. If you get a drop of 20% in the revenues, you'll know it a year ahead of time so that you can adjust your municipal programs to take with that, or you can raise taxes, or you can whatever adjustments. You can have public hearings. The people in the local community can say, yes, we want to keep this. No, we don't want to keep it. We want to raise revenues on the local level. But as we drop it, and isn't it true, Senators, that we're about 2 years further down the cycle in our drop, and then we'll level off? Isn't 88 supposed to be the leveling off?
Absolutely not. In in 88, the trouble really started.
No, I thought that...
Absolutely not. What has happened to us now is simply one thing, a function of price. It is not the function of what's in the pipeline. And beginning in either 88, 89, they're not sure, the crude oil field starts to drop. Even though other ones are coming on, we'll have about, per year, 200,000 barrels of oil less. Absolutely not. The shock was the drop in oil prices. The second one comes from the less oil, and absolutely, and that takes in Kuparuk and Lisburn and Endicott. No, so we're just in the beginning of the problems. Absolutely.
That's why I would say that this is appropriate time for this type of a bill to really go forward, is because before the state's revenues bottom out totally, as oil revenues are concerned, that it gives municipalities an opportunity to get themselves ahead of the game. My information from various sources supports everything you said, and that it would be well into the 1990s before there will be a leveling out effect. And to that extent, the municipalities can look towards waiting time as far as big projects and so on. That's why we say it feels real important to get ahead of the game at this point, so that it's going to have to tighten its belt anyway.
Yeah, now's the time to really take a look at, really what's happening.
Thank you.
Did you keep
anything happen on your land?
He's back in Washington.
Yeah. I wish you well.
Okay, Terry?
Terry Fornes, Zimmerman for Indiana. Also work for the school district as a facilities coordinator, capital projects maintenance. I understand the concept of the draft for this two-year future funding, and for anybody that's trying to establish a budget, it's definitely a very valuable tool. However, I still see it as a band-aid approach to a king-size problem. And with the declining revenues coming up, and from what I've heard in testimony today, that it's still a band-aid. Whether or not it's really going to accomplish the goal, the intent, is questionable in my mind. As far as touching a permanent fund, it's neither, as long as it's in it, but percentage bracket of the unexpended income, I can understand. But it does, in my mind, also have an effect on the permanent fund later down the road. I had another question here that, not so much as a question, but I read a statement in a letter that from Senator Jarvie Coghill. This particular sentence really threw me for a loop. I can read it as a quote. Regardless of the formula of the program used, and regardless of the requirements of the statute, the legislature can shortfall appropriations because of lack of funds. Well, the part that got me was regardless of the formula. Now, I've been on assembly for 8 years, and I've seen formulas come out. And so far, we've seen a lot of formulas that do well for the big guys and leaves people like us in Enana still holding the shortfall, and Anderson, I'm sure, suffers the same dilemma. For one thing, I look at your chart, and you got property taxes. Well, that's fine. We got a certain percentage of people that do pay taxes. But we're also trying to give support services to people that exist north and south of Indiana that are not on a tax roll. There is no census, per se, to judge them. And we are the basis of their support, their fire, their life, safety, and whatever else we can offer. But we don't get reimbursed for it. So, once again, the sentence that I read really makes the whole thing people like me now fit into this plan? Are we going to come out all right for change, or are we still going to be shortfall? The formula is a very important and critical issue to this draft. Because if we just approve the draft, or anybody that says, yeah, it's a good draft, but they don't know where the formula lies, how do they know it's a good draft?
Terry, that's the reason why that paragraph is there. Not very many people understand. Not very many people, even in municipal government, understand when they read the statutes and they say that there's $2,500 will go to per mile to the road. Legislature doesn't have to, because there's also a saving clause in all appropriating structures that if the money's not there, the state doesn't guarantee it. That's the reason why in this bill we are guaranteeing that what we say we're going to allocate to Nenana for 1988, the legislature will guarantee that they're going to give you that money, that that money will be transmitted. And if the money is not available in the general fund, it will come out of the undistributed income account. But this is a truism. This is a fact that in state statutes right now, if they say that they're going to give you $500 a kid for a certain formula at the school, and they say we're going to fund that by 90%, 10% of that comes out of there, you're going to get $450 a kid. There's nothing on those formulas that guarantees that formulas will be funded, because everything has to go according to the amount of the money. And that's what I'm saying here. What I'm saying in that paragraph is that if we fund 90% of the shared revenue program for 1988, you'll get 90%, because we're going to warrant that the shortfall coming from the legislature is going to come out of that undistributed income. But I would say that would be very, very, that would only be in places where that they will really misguess the projections, because like Senator Sturgiolowski says, that you're trying to project in the crystal ball 18 months ahead of time, and you know what that is. But that's why that's in there, so that it's a truism, it's a fact. And we live with it all the time, as you well know. You're not going to get $2,500 a mile.
Just be interested. You know, that is a major problem when you have a city and you're trying to run services and provide it to people that are outside. What's it kind of like here? Has there ever been, do you provide a number of services to people outside of the city limits? It's always, you know, it's always a problem. And I suppose you get that too in Anderson.
Well, right now the biggest issue on the table for us is the fire life safety.
Yeah.
We don't have sufficient equipment to cover both areas.
And there's not a volunteer.
We send our equipment out outside the city, and we have a problem in the city. Our necks are on the table.
Yeah, you don't have a backup.
No backup.
And there's no volunteer or independent fire district down there.
No.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say.
Okay, did I miss anybody? Is there anyone else that would like to, maybe someone that didn't sign up to testify but would like to now say some things, or maybe have some questions that they'd like to ask the committee or the Department of Community and Regional Affairs?
In other words, it doesn't have to be just on this bill.
No. Yeah. And then if there's other questions that you have, a statement that you'd like to make, or a request that you'd like to know information from the department or from the senators, or here's your yes.
Good. Talk about DEC.
About what?
He has nightmares with the Department of
Environmental
Conservation because he's our Mr. Gildersleeve.
George Hobson again. To the school funding and the procedure that we're going through right now, trying to set up a new funding schedule, and the slowness at which we can get the information back on the weighting factors that they're trying to plug into these formulas. We can't even begin to react sensibly on what a change of a weighting factor of 0.2 will do to us, because until somebody puts a dollar value to these weighting factors and it's run through the computer, you really can't tell what the weighting factor does to you. Mm-hmm. You know, it's presented, well, we change this weighting factor from point so-and-so to point so-and-so. Well, mm-hmm. What in the long run does that do to you? And it seems that it's awful slow and hard to get this information. And I know from everything you hear in the paper that you read and people talking that the legislature wants to pass something and get it over with fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'm afraid if it does get passed and gone through fairly quickly, that just one weighting factor point in the wrong place is going to wipe a small school completely out.
It won't.
Yeah, that's one of the elements of the new formula is small school. There's a weight there that they have given for schools that are less than 100 students. So hopefully that. But I don't know how the rest of the formula will affect you, but I know that there is that in there.
Well, traditionally, through the past, the small municipality has had a very rough time of it because we don't have the ability to lobby as the big cities do or as the REAs do that are so much bigger than we are. So we kind of end up being stuck in the back. And, you know, less than 100, and then the actual, how many of them are between 100 and 300 and 100 and 500 that fit into this small city group if you're not in an REA?
Madam Chair, you know, one of the things, you know, I've been down there for a few years in the group of course. They get a new formula that makes some sense about, you know, it's really where kids are and where the education is, where the needs are. And as you well know, we go all the way from 17,000 plus for one child to way down to, I don't know, 4,000 or something. And I've struggled now for over 3 years to try to get a new formula, and it always gets into that, into a hassle when you get down to it. And I thought it was kind of interesting this time that the Department of Education developed their formula, but absolutely in not applying it against what happens really out there. You've got X number of kids and you've got X number of districts. And both Senator DeVries and I serve on Health Education Social Services, so we've had the formula, and then after that meeting they were going to go back and put it out there to see what really happened. And you're absolutely right. One of the big problems now is with the revenues down, we're not going to be able to, like when we passed revenue sharing back in, I don't know, 81 or 82, we had a hold harmless clause. So you really have to do whatever you can through, you know, getting through Senator Coghill legislative information and so on to be sure you get on that list for getting information as soon as it's out, because they're playing with that formula right now. It's going to be a battle, because basically, now I don't know how the small schools are going to do, but basically the rural education attendance areas are going to lose and the larger districts are going to gain. And there have been some problems built into that, but there are also some factors in there that should help. But an area like Nenana that has X number of bonding capacity, you really are in a tough position. And there are other places like Sandpoint and other communities that fit in exactly where you are. You just don't have that kind of capacity in terms of capital improvements or in terms of mill levies and so on. So, you know, that's not answering your question, except that I think you're absolutely right on. And it probably would be worth a phone call right now to see exactly where you are. Is that Lorraine Glenn? Is that the name of the person, the woman that's involved, Department of Education? I'd see where you come out.
Our superintendent
is probably doing that right now.
Ask him to be very active.
Yeah, I would, because
he has tried to be.
There's going to be another meeting to the Health Education and Social Services Committee on November 4th, and I'm sure there are going to be a lot of figures produced. And boy, if I were you, I'd sure like to, you know, you really ought to be on it right now.
Those supposedly will be presented to the School Boards Association.
Yeah, and when is that?
The state conference that starts the 9th.
The 9th, yeah, which is just after this this meeting. I want to attend that.
Yeah, George, you know, that kind of typifies the all of the things that legislators are required to digest, you know, and school foundation formula has got to have the one element that's not in there is local effort. The problem with the smaller schools like Lenana is that we have exactly the same problem that we're dealing with in the task force right now, is that it's not a population or an ADM total thing. It's an, when we first put the, I was the president of the territorial school board when we put our first formula together in 1957.
Is that right?
And what we used ADM, that's average daily membership, and attendance units, and then classroom units within attendance units, because that's the problem that we have in small cities also, is that in small cities, it cost us so many dollars to run that ambulance. It cost us so many dollars to run that fire department. And that fire department and that ambulance could serve 5,000 people. Or, you know, that's what we're looking
at.
And we're at 600 and some people, and we have got to bear the cost.
Sure.
And so that's the attendance unit that we're looking at in the concept of what are we doing with the municipal assistant. The same thing has got to happen. And what the problem is with the school foundation formula is that the special interests got into it, and all of the special education, non-special education, vocational education, non-vocational education, and the formula is just good. And I suppose you people have been dealing with that a little bit. I'm not in that. I've got highways to worry about. But the thing is that as we get into that, they have to go back to the original concept of the formula and then build from there, which is ADM and attendance units. And it has to be by attendance units, because you've got schools in the larger communities that have got up to 26, 27 people in the classroom per teacher load. And you've got some, but you can't compare that teacher load to the teacher load in Nenana, where you got 8 in a class, because that teacher, it still costs the same. You see? And so when they start talking about $1,700 cost for a student, you know, and I've been wrapped around our neck a couple of times, I think our cost is around 9. I think it's around 9, is it, George?
Our total
cost per student.
No, it's a lot higher than that.
Yeah, what is it, 13? 12? 13? 11?
We're not 17.
No, we're not 17. No. That's out in the West Coast. I think something in that area, but what I'm saying is that because in numbers comes economy, you know, so that's, I'm just saying that for you two learned senators benefit when you get into those formulas, because we can't, but you can rest assured that we're going to be on top of all those formulas.
The other part of that is that things like, I'm sure you've all heard of the new vocational education standards that have been set by the state. And I think that's wonderful that our state is progressive enough that we can do those kind of things. But on the other hand, if the weighting factor that is in the formula doesn't correspond to the requirements that we have to do under the regulations, the Department of Ed sits there and makes a regulation that we have to meet, but yet that does not correlate to the legislature and how much money we are appropriated to meet that.
And then can you make a note to really zero in on that? I have to be traveling on that particular next meeting, but that's one that really does need an explanation as to how that ties in. You're absolutely right. If you're going to mandate it, but you don't cover it, you got problems.
Yeah.
And you know, I know they did some moderation of those, but they're still, you know, can create a real impact for rural education attendance there as well as small schools. It's one thing in Anchorage, Alaska. It's certainly another in Nenana and some of the other areas.
Yeah, kind of an example in round figures again. Previously, we've been funded at about $22,000 for our voc ed section. Under the current formula that's on the table right now, we will get down to $13,000 for our voc ed program.
And then higher standards.
With higher standards. You can't begin to hire a person to even cover a few classes for 13,000. construction or something else just to be able to have a program, period. And it's not fair to those other programs.
Yeah, I know that both, you know, the Kenai Peninsula School District is the school district I represent, as well as the Mat-Su, and that they have small schools as well as large schools in those areas. And I know that in talking to them, I know they've had some long dialogues with the Department of Education regarding the new vocational standards. And I don't know, I haven't talked to them in the last couple of weeks, so I don't know how far they've gotten, but I know that they were going to testify and tell them, you know, that they thought that they should back off a little bit and do some more examination before they put those regulations into effect.
Yeah, it almost wipes the vocab program out of a small school because
yeah,
you
that's
can't
what they
meet the
saying.
Standards.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right, and that's the bad part about that whole formula. It's got to be adjusted.
The next thing which Jack mentioned as I came up on, I have very direct contact with DEC in the fact that I operate water and sewer plants here. And our state, I think, is very progressive in how we are trying to treat our environment and how we're trying to clean up some of the pollution problems we have that have existed for years through water and sewer projects. And we are having growing pains, there's no doubt about that. The new regulations that are open for discussion until the end of this month, I think it is, puts some heavy user fees on us as certificated operators. And the fact that we will be required to pay a fee to register to take the test for an operator certificate, we will have to pay a fee to take the test, and then we will also have to pay a fee to renew the license, which we have to do every 3 years, I think it is, under the current program. Mm-hmm. There again, I'm back to a small system, but I run the whole system. Mm-hmm. I currently hold 2 licenses, and as our system grows a little bit, I will be required to hold 4 licenses. It adds up to a lot after a while, and there again, either I have to come up with it as the license holder, or we have to try and put it somewhere in my budget. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, we are also required a certain amount of training every year to keep these licenses to be able to renew them. And
they're charging for those.
Previously, yes, DEC had put on a certain number of free training classes. We will now be required, if this new regulation goes through, to pay a certain dollar about for each one of the courses that we take, depending on how many credits we are awarded for.
Do you have any idea what those fees for registration and licensing in terms of dollars?
I don't have my sheet with me right now. It was $10, I think, to register, $15 to take the test, and $30 to renew each certificate.
But
and they don't have just a classification where you, as the operator of a, you know, a certain size water and sewer would just require one license. So they have many levels in there, even though you're only operating the one
plant? There are many levels, and each thing is a separate operation. The water plant is one license. The sewer plant is another license. A distribution system is one license, and a collection system is one license.
Now, so they don't have a classification there for a water system for a municipality up to
water
a 1,000.
Well, then,
people or something
then
like
on
that.
Top of each one of those, you have a Class A, B, and C license for the water plant determined by the size of the operation, by how many people. And it's quite a formula how they
figure
out what kind of treatment you have for your water, how many people you are serving for your water, how many miles of distribution system you have that classifies what type of system you are. And that in itself then regulates the 5 different steps